Well, hello there. Welcome to another edition of Northern Transmissions. Thanks, as always, for listening. I was quite excited about this edition, which features Ivan from Men Without Hats. Let's listen to the brand new single, Head Above Water, from their forthcoming album, the first one in 10 years, actually, entitled Love in the Age of War. I was really curious to ask Ivan about getting back to making music again. It had been about 10 years since the last record, as well as working with Dave Rave Ogilvy, who's more known for working with a bit more heavy artists such as Nine Inch Nails and, of course, Skinny Puppy.
It kind of happened naturally because the tour, it kind of happened after the tour. The tour was just basically a case of I wanted to get back into it. I was sort of sitting around here, like I've been a stay-at-home dad for the last 10 years, and so my son was, you know, almost 10. He's getting ready to, he can take care of himself now, and I was, so I had a lot of free time on my hand. I was just itching to get back into the business. I missed it so much, and so the tour was just a great sort of first step for me to get back into it. And on the tour, I mean, I guess it was just a question of getting back into a Men Without Hats kind of situation that I just started writing songs again. It just started to pour out of me. And I spent like the last tour in the back of the bus with my iPad writing a bunch of songs on GarageBand, and that's what became the new record. So it wasn't anything, we didn't really set out to sort of, okay, we're going to do a tour, we're going to do an album, we're going to, you know, blah, blah, blah. It just came naturally, and I just started writing songs, and my manager realized that, hey, you know, a lot of songs, we should make a record, and that's what we did. Well, first of all, that he delivers the goods when you work with him. The second thing was he'd produced, like, you know, Rational Youth, the Skinny Puppy stuff, Images in Vogue. He worked on that. Like, so he'd done a lot of the big, you know, Canadian new wave acts, and I guess this was the only one missing for him. But just the fact that he was out here, we had a lot of friends in common. He's from Montreal too, and we had never met, but we both knew the same people. He'd done. I'm being managed by John Kasner of the Doughboys. I don't know if you remember them.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and Dave did a Doughboys record. I forget which one it was, but he worked on a Doughboys record a while back, and so he knew John, and they'd been talking, and we when we finally met, we hit it off immediately. We set off in doing this record. We set ourselves as a sort of a guideline. What would have happened if, instead of doing Pop Goes the World, I would have done a record like the follow up to Rhythm of Youth, you know, or the Where Do the Boys Go record, you know? What would have happened if I would have kept in that same vein instead of going with, you know, as we went into Pop Goes the World, that was like sort of the, you know, MIDI appeared on the scene and you know, computers appeared and the whole game changed when we made Pop Goes the World as far as techno music is concerned, as the technology just got so advanced. And so we got into this. My goal in Pop Goes the World was to make a super orchestral record, but with keyboards, you know, and I totally achieved what I set out to do. But for this record, we wanted to see what would happen if we would have just kept along the same lines, just, you know, with the same gear, the same type of songs, you know, and that's what we did. And because I'd always been curious myself, what if I would have stayed instead of branching off and getting, you know, going down a different path? What if I would have stayed in that real sort of electropop vein? And so that's how we did this record. We sort of imagined that we were back in the 80s working on a 24-track board so that, you know, we didn't give ourselves a, you know, infinity amount of virtual tracks like you can now. We limited ourselves. We limited the amount of, you know, the keyboards that we put on, just so it would sound like back then. Like back then, there was no MIDI. There was no sequencing. Every line that I played live. If I wanted to double track the line to stack another sound, I had to replay the line on top of it. There was no sequence. There was nothing. So that's basically how we approached this record. When back in the 80s, when we put a sound down on a track, it had to be a good sound. We didn't have MIDI to be able to stack like 6 or 7 keyboards together. And we didn't have an unlimited amount of tracks, so we had to make sure that every sound was the best we could come up with. And that's, like I say, that's how we sort of approached this record. Instead of getting, like, you know, 3,000 keyboard sounds stacked together to build one, we just tried to find one really good one. And we used a lot of the same gear as we used back then. We used the main keyboard was the Yamaha CS50 that I used to play, like, front and center stage while I was singing. And we used that keyboard for most of the songs on this record.
The light of the moon, roses are red.
you'd like a bit more information about Men Without Hats, you can check out their website at www.menwithouthats.com. But I didn't have to explain that to you. You knew that. Or you can check out their spot on the fabulous, or not so fabulous, at Facebook. You can check out information about our show at northerntransmissions.com. Drop us an email there. Or you can follow us on Twitter at Northern Trends.
You know, you've always been into the electronic-y techno sound, and I was going to ask you how, you know, working in the studio today is compared to working back in the day. But
that's basically it. You know, the differences are that well, first of all, like, everybody's got a studio. Anybody who's got a computer's got a studio these days, you know. So the whole studio atmosphere is kind of, it's not a dying art, but it's like, you know, they're still around, but, you know, like, less and less records are being made in them, unfortunately, you know. And I mean, I guess the main thing that's changed is there aren't any record stores anymore.
That's right.
That's one thing, you know. Like, somebody asked me, like, well, you know, where's your record coming out? And I go, my record's coming out, like, you know, if you can get a connection on the moon, you can get it. You can get our record there, you know. It's like, it's everywhere, you know. There's no stores anymore. There's, you know, it's my first three records didn't even come out on CD.
That's, you know, amazing.
And so there's already no CDs anymore. Like, you know, we're printing them, but they're almost like, we'll probably sell more vinyl. I mean it's all audiophile now, I guess, but, you know, it's like the people who are buying vinyl are, you know, the fans are asking me, like, you know, like, what kind of pressing is it even, you know, like, they're really concerned, you know, because they've all got probably, like, you know, $2,000 turntables, you know, but, you know, it's just another facet of this whole thing, you know. It's like, I mean, in some ways it's good, in some ways it's, you know, like, things were easier back then, some things are easier now, you know. It's just, it's always, the whole business is always really cyclical too anyway, so it's always sort of constant flow of majors, you know, like new styles of music coming up and little independent labels being created and then being sucked up by the majors and then, you know, the whole thing starting over and over, you know. It's a cyclical business. So.
The music industry has changed so much. And like, where do you see it going from here?
I think there's going to be a move backwards, you know. I'm sort of seeing that all over the place now, like, sort of, companies are springing up now, little niche companies delivering a service that used to happen 20 years ago that doesn't anymore and that people really like, you know? Just like, you know, like turntables. People are going to make a lot of money building turntables again, you know? And there's going to be a lot more things like that, I think. And I think, you know, people are going to start to realize, like, we don't have to go, like, progress is one thing, but it's when it's at the expense of, like, something that, you know, that used to work, and now we sort of, we're getting something that's supposedly better, but it's, you know, basically just for the profit margin. I think people are going to start demanding better service and better things, like, you know, saying, I don't care if it costs more, I want it to work, you know? And I think the industry is going to do that too. Like, people are going to realize that people are going to get, like, the thing is that our whole society is, like, capitalism is based on consumerism.
Yeah.
And people are being conned into buying stuff that doesn't exist. Like, everything they're buying now is in a cloud. Their movies, all their entertainment is in a cloud. And at one point, I think people are going to, I don't know, but I say a possible scenario is that people are going to get, say, hey, I'm spending all this money, I got nothing to show for it, you know?
Good point.
I want to have something to show for it. I want to have a shelf full of DVDs, you know? I want to have a big rack full of records again, you know? I want to have a huge system with huge speakers, you know? I don't want to have, like, little tiny speakers. I want giant speakers. I want a big table. I want a big, you know, that could happen, you know? I don't know, but it could happen, you know? Because, like I say, like, now we got a generation of kids who don't want to be bothered by carrying around a CD, you know? The last thing they want to do is being, like, having the 3 or 4 CDs to carry around with them. But, you know, one thing that's coming back now is also, like, people are realizing, like I read this really interesting thing online. It was about this woman who went into a classroom and interviewed a bunch of students and asked them how they thought, since they expected everything for free, how did they think that their artist, their favorite artist, should get compensated? And most of them said, well, I would tell my friends about it. But the person said, yeah, but your friends, that's not making, that's not compensating the, if your friends are getting it for free too, it's not compensating, the artist is still not getting compensated. And the kids were kind of drawing a blank. They were getting into, like, you know, I would draw them a picture, you know, I'd write them a poem. And it was like, there was, you know, they didn't really get the concept that, that they don't understand that artists depend on that for their livelihood, you know? They just were born into a society where things are free, you know? They can get all this, they can just go online and just download it, you know? I mean, less and less now, but it's, you know, it's for, you know, for a whole generation of people, file sharing was like that, you know, was a God-given right. There'll be an attitude change. Like I said, you know, like, you know, when people get tired of holding their iPhone up in the air when they go to a show, you know, and they realize that they should have just watched the show instead of spending their whole show with their arm in the air taping it to watch it after, like on a crummy little screen with crummy little sound. Why didn't you just like pay attention while you were there?
Thank you.
Are you amazed at the staying power of your music? I mean, because I've seen your music around, I see it on TV, and, you know, I've seen it in films and stuff, and it's still, you know, you have a handful of songs that are still popular to this day.
Yeah, well, that was another thing that made it, you know, possible for me to come back was last year I was sitting, well, 2 years ago, sitting around, and, you know, it was on Glee, it was on advertising, it was in movies, Hot Tub Time Machine, it was just all over the place, and there was that, and then there was the fact that every time I turn on the radio, any new song I listened to had synthesizers and, like, 80s drum kick in it, you know, and it just seemed like the right thing to do. It seemed like the right timing. I was wanting to get back, and I had all these tools at my disposal, you know. So it was good. It was just all sort of came together. But like I say, I'm truly blessed for you know, for these songs. Like you say, the staying power of them. Every time somebody else uses it, I'm just amazed. Really, I totally realize I'm one of the fortunate ones. You know, it's a hard business. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, like I've always said. You know, if my son wants to get into the music industry, he's going to be a lawyer. You know, and like it's a hard business. It's a business that if you want security, don't be a musician. Don't be an artist. You know, be a doctor or something like that. There's always going to be sick people around. You know, there's guarantees there. But in music and in the arts, there's no guarantee. It's a crapshoot every time you wake up in the morning. Every time you write a song, it's a crapshoot. You know, so I'm one of the lucky ones. I mean, and thank my stars every morning when I wake up that people still like my music. You know, because I see so much heartache out there. People put their lives into their music and just, it's, you know, never happened. And that for me is one of the saddest things when somebody puts so much work and, like, I collect. I'm a vinyl junkie. Besides music, my other hobby is music, you know. So it's like and I listen to a lot of, like, early 70s, like, progressive music, and I listen to these things and these guys pouring their lives into this thing, and they might have sold like 10 copies, you know, and nobody knows. Sometimes I find it so beautiful, and sometimes I just find it so sad, you know. And it's just like, the people that do it, I have nothing but admiration for artists, because it, you know, having done it and, you know, being a successful one, I just know that it's like the NHL, like, you know, there's like, how many jobs are there in the NHL? Like 500-600, you know? How many hundreds of thousands of kids are trying every year to fill those 500 positions, you know? It's sad. There's a lot of kids that get left by the wayside, you know, and the same thing in music and the same thing in a lot of things, you know, but mostly in the arts and, you know, the entertainment business is where a lot of dreams get shattered.
I was really curious to know, do you remember when you came up with the hook for Safety Dance?
I definitely remember are you talking about the beep, octave beep bleeps at the beginning? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, because that's like, I mean, everybody knows that.
No, that was just something. I mean, when we made that remix, it was like, you know, people were, you know, the label said to us, you have to make a, you know, you have to remix, do a dance remix of the song. And we were like, what? What is that? You know, like, nobody knew what it was, you know? And they were like, well, just go out there. There's a bunch of them out there. Just go listen to some remixes and just do the same thing. So, you know, basically that's all we had to go on, you know? We went and just listened to some remixes and just did it, you know? And so those ideas just, you know, I did the spoken part because I was a big fan of Grandmaster Flash. And you know, that was my rap, you know, that was my white boy rap. And I mean, to the point that we played once in Poughkeepsie, New York, and I remember a young girl came up and after the show outside, and she said to me, she says, I almost didn't come and see you because I thought you were black.
Oh,
you know?
God.
So, I mean, that was, you know, my white boy rap must have worked. But that was, that's, you know, that's where that came from. I was just, you know, going with what I knew.
Thanks very much for listening to Northern Transmissions. Thanks to Ivan from Men Without Hats. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. All the tracks we heard, by the way, were from the upcoming 2012 release, Love in the Age of War. I am Charles Brownstein, as always, and my friend and partner who puts the whole thing together, I thank him, Spencer Carson, as usual. If you'd like any more information about the band, you can go to their website, which is menwithouthats.com, or you can check them out on Facebook. Please check us out at northerntransmissions.com. You can email us there. We're on Twitter at Northern Trans. And let's go out with the song The Girl with the Silicon Eyes.